Welcome all to WFHR's Rapids Report for this June 6, 2025. Show is proudly brought to you by Crockett Septic. Big shout out to our new sponsors. We appreciate the gang at Crockett Septic. And we appreciate our guest today. Joining us right now, as he has every month for so long now, Representative Scott Krug on the phone with us. Scott, how are you doing?
I'm good. You know, I'm glad you mentioned it. It's been a while now because I'm trying to think back to the very first conversation that I had in the old studio with Carl, and it had to be right before election in 2010. So what, wow. That's 15 years ago already?
That's crazy. That is crazy. Yeah. I loved the conversations you and Carl had. They were fantastic. You guys always had good conversations. And we appreciate that you have always made the time to do these things. Know that we weren't able to hang out last month, but we both get busy and schedules and all those things. And honestly, this is something I say to you and Senator Teston, even Sheriff Becker. When you're not able to be here, that the day job comes first, and you know that's all right. We encourage that, of course. We understand that around here. But with
I know, but I mean, this is the day job part two, though. I mean, you know, honestly, it sucks when I can't make it work. But you know, this is the stuff that's more important than sitting in the Capitol, though. So I want people to know that, like, if something comes up and it just doesn't work that month, it's not like it was meant to be. It was really a struggle to try to fit it in and make it work, and sometimes it just doesn't. But this is probably more important than sitting in the Capitol, actually.
Appreciate that. And Scott has proven that over and over again, to the point where we've done many interviews with you sitting in like a Quick Trip parking lot, just so you can get the call in and everything. Like, yeah.
Exactly.
I wanted to take some time to focus on a couple of big things that you've been up to in the last couple of months, one of them being the Wisconsin Fast Forward Grant. Can you tell the listeners about this? I really find this encouraging.
Yeah, so Fast Forward is something that we created way back in like the 2013, 2015 state budget, and it's just something that we've been really working on right-sizing the whole time, too, just trying to get more involvement of youth in various different workforce opportunities throughout the state of Wisconsin. So it's a skills development program, a worker training group program, and there's little bits of it of retention for current employees, some training for new people. So I think it's been our best answer to the struggles we've got with our changing demographics at the state level, is just trying to make sure that A, we're able to retain people, B, that we're able to, develop skills for people who want to move up to a new job, C, that we create internship opportunities across the state. And it's been really highly successful and pretty bipartisan every time we've gone back to the pool here to try to beef it up a little bit more. So we're spending some decent amount of money trying to make sure that the workforce is trained and ready for 21st century jobs, knowing that as fast as we go, AI is passing us up left and right, and it kind of causes us some struggle and grief when we focus so much on computer science and engineering jobs and Fast Forward and our university programs, and all of a sudden AI starts gobbling those jobs up quicker than we can respond. It does get tough. So, I mean, that's the point of Fast Forward, is trying to keep up with technology and keep the workforce as trained and ready as possible.
Some of it also, some of the intention does feel like also doing a little bit of catching up. I don't think that Wisconsin is behind on certain things or anything, but there are some areas that we haven't necessarily gotten on, like a lot of the surrounding states have and everything. So there's a little bit of that to it that I find encouraging as well.
Yeah, I think the main reason we actually created Fast Forward way back in the day, like I get to say as an old timer now, is, we saw the challenges and struggles with the paper industry coming a long ways away, right? We knew the aging demographics were changing the workforce capabilities and availability. We saw all the closures happening at the end of the, 08, 09, 10, 11 years. Anticipated some future ones that happened, of course, to us here in Rapids and other areas, and tried to make sure that we understood that those people who were in that workforce at that time, whose skills were not diminishing, but their jobs were going away because of technology and different opportunities and different innovations, that we wanted to make sure that people who are dependable and reliable have every skill set they would ever need to achieve success in any workforce setting. Because any employer will tell you this, whether it's in the service industry or whether it's manufacturing, as long as they have employees who are dependable and reliable, they can teach them just about anything. So we wanted to make sure that everybody in our workforce who fits those two categories already can just get the skills training they need wherever they might end up.
One other note on this that I thought was noteworthy about it. When we were kids, I don't know about you, but I know the first time that I heard about like a Coach Alvarez for UW, and he had a pipeline to in New York, and he had a pipeline, of course, to Florida and to here in Wisconsin, and how important that was recruiting-wise and all of that. It pops in mind when I was first reading about this years ago, and even just bringing it back up now, about how important that is for states. And Wisconsin certainly one of those states that is important to keep our local talent and keep people in-house, in-state here.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly what happened after the first iteration of Fast Forward, is you started to see a lot of chambers, like here in Wisconsin Rapids, where they went to the heavy metal bus tours for the eighth graders to get out to manufacturers and start introducing kids to different opportunities within their communities. So when government money is free for things like Fast Forward, that these kids who have an interest can match it up with availability of training, and that pipeline is built. So, I mean, it's turned into a very massive workforce development project. So we keep going back every state budget and looking at ways of making it better, or getting rid of different, you know, pathways that just, you know, kind of fizzled away because of technology or changes. But you're never going to see a shortage in nursing. You're never going to see a shortage in CNA training. You're never going to see a shortage in trying to beef up manufacturing. So, I mean, those things that we know are going to be time proven, we try to invest a lot quicker in. And at the same time, like I mentioned, on the AI side of it, we're really trying to develop a training and a pathway that our tech schools and our universities and Fast Forward can all work together to capture this new growing change in our world.
Mm-hmm. You recently, it was somewhat recently, you had a public hearing on SB 156. This is the bill requiring first responders to be trained to administer epi delivery systems. This has a lot to it, a lot of depth to it and everything. I wanted to take a moment to talk about this, Scott.
Yeah, and this was something that, again, you know, you go back in legislative history, and back in 2017, we had passed Dillon's Law, which was kind of the first iteration of the EpiPen stuff, where we wanted to make sure that if somebody in the community was going to administer an Epi to somebody in distress, that there would be no liability for them trying to be a good Samaritan. So that's kind of where this whole discussion started. And now going through, you know, different, you know, phases of this again, we come across cases, and unfortunately the one here in Wisconsin Rapids was another one of those where an individual was in distress, first responder on the scene, didn't quite have exactly all the technology or gear that they may need, and it caused a catastrophic result in the end. So this bill kind of evolved out of the situation here in Wisconsin Rapids area of a young man who had passed away at the scene. So the bill basically now, as it's written, as it sits right now, says, hey, we want to make sure that every first responder, whether it's EMT, fire, or police, have the training and have the, you know, actual product, the EpiPens, on them as they respond to scenes anywhere in the state of Wisconsin. It's a huge lift. It's a huge financial burden until we can get manufacturers and distributors of EpiPens to get on board to bring down the cost of these things. It's going to cost a lot of state money to get this done, but Senator Testa and I thought it was important enough because of what happened here locally to say, hey, there should never be a situation where somebody is depending on emergency services to help save them and the first few that arrive just don't have the capability to do so. And there is a lot of discussion about the bill getting done because of the mandates for training, trying to make sure the state's got money into this to make sure that all the equipment can be bought. These are not cheap devices. They're hard to store for a long period of time. They have to be replaced every so often. It's super expensive, but it's super worth it. So it's gone through the state Senate committee already, so now we're working on getting hearings in the state assembly this fall to try to get this on the governor's desk before we adjourn next spring.
You know, every once in a while, as a consumer, you can get away with getting the generic version of something, you know, and it does a good job. It holds up and everything. But even those things don't last nearly as long as usually the regular products do. There are some things you can't shortchange. There are some things you got to spend money on. this, to me, just my opinion, it's one of those things. And I can even make an argument that it'll cost the taxpayers less in the long run with the amount of lives we might have a possibility of losing. And even if it was just one person, I think that it's this is a pill that needs to be pushed through, needs to happen. I want to just piggyback on something you said in your e-letter, too, and be since respect and appreciation to the Mueller family and the parents there and what they did with this. Also,
I mean, I did meet with them. We were here in Rome with them again yesterday, and it's just it's heartbreaking to watch them have to go through all of the media to try to bring awareness to the issue that they're trying to get to the forefront. You see this, the grief and the struggle, and you hear it in their voices, and you see it on their faces, and that's what, you know, that's what makes us want to get this thing done even quicker. So. Mm-hmm.
Scott, also wanted to speak with you about you recently. The Wisconsin legislature considered workforce-focused bills to improve program accountability, re-employment outcomes, unemployment insurance, and integrity. What was discussed there? How did that go?
Well, you know, just again, we're kind of in this realm where the workforce is changing so darn quick, and we're trying to figure out ways to right-size it where government isn't seen as the hammock in some situations, but we want to try to, you know, reiterate to people that there are plenty of opportunities in the community to get out and go find other employment opportunities if they get, you know, downsized or you know, outdone by a computer in their work field. Mm-hmm. So working on the unemployment stuff and working on these other things just to try to make sure that everybody knows opportunities exist, that nobody's going to be left in the lurch, but also that they that we are there having everybody's back to make sure they can get in the community and get reemployment opportunities as quick as humanly possible. It's all about rapid attachment, and the quicker that we can get people to understand where the opportunities are, there's no shortage of people that want those opportunities. It's just the lack of being able to know what resources are available that causes gaps in the workforce. It's not because people are lazy. It's not because people don't want to work. Because they just can't find where those resources are if we don't amplify that message a little bit more.
And one other thing I wanted to touch on before we get into the budget talk with you, Scott. Last month, you had a campaigns and elections meeting. You, of course, are the vice chair of the committee on campaigns and elections. You guys had some bills that we went over and tackled. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, campaigns and elections is still, you know, my target area. I know being in leadership now, I've got a little different role overarching on it, but I still think, you know, not being the chair of a committee lends me to be able to write bills that can actually go to that committee now. So now I've taken on a different role in that committee by just becoming somebody that brings the bills to the committee and gets to argue in leadership that the Senate should take it up. So I think a lot of the things we're talking about still early on in campaigns and elections are bipartisan ways that we can just get rid of some of the perception problems we have on our election system in the state of Wisconsin. You know, the one we just heard this last week was, I think, probably the most important one we've heard so far, was the idea that right now, when we go to change the Constitution, I get so many phone calls from people saying, hey, this is on my ballot. What does it mean? Like, you know, we had to go back and actually, you know, put together a bill saying, hey, when we're putting together these referendum questions, I get that the lawyers have to write them because that's just the legalese of the world today. Mm-hmm. But there should also be a process when we put together these memos or these ideas on a ballot that there should be some plain language definitions on what it actually means to the voter. So AB 207 is an example of what that does. It basically says, okay, if you have a constitutional question on the ballot, every polling place, every publication for, you know, the requirements to get it out to the public also have to have this disclosure statement telling people in plain language exactly what it is and what we're doing. And you know, we could argue all the details of it in committee as much as we want. Some want us to add a little more language to say it should be an eighth grade reading level or things like that. But I think just having the legislators on a committee actually discussing what the plain language summary should be to everybody in the public before they vote, it's probably a really good idea instead of all of us having to guess what those things mean on a ballot. Yeah. Making sure that there's not a double negative question on the ballot, making sure that it's the easiest to understand. I mean, three of the last four were relatively easy to understand, but there was one last August, I believe it was. It was just so confusing. I didn't even understand it. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, after sitting on the committee, you know what it's supposed to be, but when it gets written in legalese, nobody could figure out what the hell it is. I mean, we're just trying to right-size and common sense some of these things. So that's what AB 207 will do, and I think that's one that should get, it's got really good bipartisan support in our communities. It just doesn't seem to have it at the committee level right now. And I told the bill author, I said, when you can get a bill that's supported by the Republican legislature and it's also supported by the ACLU, I think you might be onto something. So I think we can get home on this one.
So, Scott, one of the things that I couldn't agree with you more about this one, one of the things about it that I think stands out, so when you say, I can't imagine why there'd be any pushback to this, is the pushback not so much against the bill, just more being more wording about it and some of that. It's not so much that they just want to kill this idea or anything. It's more so just want to make sure that it's right.
Yeah, I think so. We had a lot of conversations yesterday between Lee Snodgrass, the ranking Democrat, and I were talking through it all day yesterday. We'll talk through it again today. That's what Leah and I have done the last 3 years. Is it's not that she hates the idea. It's just the way that we're going about it may be different in her opinion than our opinion. But, you know, we've got the, you know, we kind of go through and listen to all these groups that come in sometimes, too. So the clerks, obviously, being the biggest one, they're the ones that answer this question 1,000 times more than I do every time when somebody comes to the polling place and says, I don't know what this means, can you tell me?
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you look at a bill, and we have as much conversations as we do about every single bill, you know, I always tell people, it's like, you can't let perfect get in the way, you know, can't let perfect get in the way of the good, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to get to an exact perfect answer because there just never is one.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, if we can get the, you know, disability rights groups there, League of Women Voters are okay with it. The all, you know, local voting groups are all good with it. And I think it's just trying to get the governor to say he's okay with it is about the only challenge that's left now. I know that I'd love to have everybody in the committee vote for it, but if I have a couple that don't vote for it in a committee, that's neither here nor there. I think the votes are there to pass it. It's just a matter of getting the governor to be comfortable with it at this point.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Representative Scott Krug. And Scott, it is budget season, along with many other things. Let's get into that a little bit. How is that going?
It was going pretty good, I'd say, for the last 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, we had a little bit of a slow start to the process, trying to make sure we had some negotiated agreements before we go into it. You know, you may remember last budget, we got the document through the legislature, put on the governor's desk, and he did put together that 400-year veto that kind of caught the legislature off guard. So it created some issues with trust and just giving the document over without negotiating ahead of time. So we did spend about the last, I'd say, last 3 or 4 weeks pretty solid trying to negotiate an idea with the governor that says, hey, we understand we've got some surplus funds here. We don't have as much as we thought because of inflation and other things, but we've still got $1 billion that we want to figure out how to get back into our communities the best we can. Governor, can we negotiate with you to say, you know, we want to get our tax cuts done, but we also understand you've got some spending priorities. Let's figure out how to get that done. So we did sit down the last few weeks and negotiated out saying, hey, the tax cut at $500 million would be great. And if we could spend an equivalent $500 million in your priorities, we can make that work. Second step was figure out what those priorities were, figure out what the tax plan is, kind of figure those out. And late this week, things kind of fell apart because the spending plan got a little pricier than it was negotiated to be. So we were on the verge for about a $500 million tax cut, but the spend idea that came back from the governor was about $1.5 billion instead of $500 million. So we're only $1 billion apart.
Hey, that's encouraging. That's
but we got a whole month to figure it out. So I think it was just decided that, hey, we finally at least have conversations. We haven't had that in years.
Mm-hmm.
Between legislative leaders and the governor. So that was a really big plus to negotiating. Our finance process will kind of take over from here, just the same process we've gone through the last few budgets where the finance committee, Republicans, Democrats, get together on each individual area, negotiate them, vote them out, send it to the governor, and he's going to have to do what he does with it again at this point, which it wasn't the worst situation we've ever had. The governor signed the last three budgets we sent to him. to likely sign this one. It's just we wanted to see if we can get some negotiated settlement and some guarantees on vetoes before we sent it over. So, I mean, in the end, we'll have a budget. In the end, it'll probably be on time. In the end, it'll fund K through 12. It'll fund roads. It'll fund the, you know, the important stuff that both sides find that are absolutely critical to get money back into our communities. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there'll be a tax cut, though. I mean, that's the one thing that I don't know that he signs. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know, again, where we're going to land on extra spending because we don't have a lot of ongoing revenue. We just have a lot of one-time money. So I think in the end, it's good that we'll have a budget, because if we don't do a budget, that's a bad sign to our communities that we can't figure out how to do our damn jobs, right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to get this document done. We'll get it on his desk. He does what he does, and he can face the voters afterwards if he comes up with another 400-year veto or something like that. That's going to be on him to explain. So we, you know, I don't want to tell people it's going to be exactly how the legislature wants it, but it should never be just the way one side wants it anyways. So. Right. It's a thing. At least it's a created document at this point.
Mm-hmm. And before we wrap up, I did want to mention that you got a spring survey that is out there. We will encourage people to sign up and fill that out.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to go about the spring survey, if you haven't got one in the mail, we are still going door to door in several communities handing them out yet too. If you don't see one or don't get one, you can always feel free to email my office at rep.krug@legis.wisconsin.gov. It's the easiest way to just let staff know you'd like the link to fill it out. We get the electronic results. You can save a stamp. But it's absolutely critical that I get folks to fill these out as much as possible, because I think right now we've got, I think there were 1,800 returns on this so far out of the probably 20,000 some that go out into the community. I mean, I'd love to see a rate of return at least, you know, 20% of my district instead of 10%, just so I know exactly what people's priorities are and budgets and, you know, other policies that come up, whether it's marijuana or childcare or abortion or roads or, you know, all this stuff is, you know, kind of put into these 10 questions on the survey. It should take you maybe 2 minutes to complete.
And it is one more way for you to have your voice heard and to help Scott do his job, really, to be blunt about it. You know, it's I don't think it's asking a lot.
I don't know what you want unless you tell me what you want. Yeah. Right? And that's my job as a representative, is to represent what you want. And if nobody tells me what you want, I'm also my own constituent. Mm-hmm. I could tell myself what I wanted, but I'd rather hear what everybody else wants first.
Scott, we did our job. We get to wrap up talking a little Brewers. They're 9-1 in their last 10. Putting Chad Patrick on the mound today. I know his record ain't the greatest, but I like the way he's been pitching so far this season. I think the pitching staff is really starting to come around.
Man, I tell you, I was super excited about the pitching staff coming around until Woody made his last appearance in AAA and got nailed in the arm by a comebacker. I'm like, I thought we were finally on the path to get him back here. But I still think, you know, as good as the Brewers are, the Cubs did just as great over that 10-game stretch. So they didn't gain much ground, but they're a lot easier to watch now than they were in April and May, that's for sure.
It's been fun to see some of these guys. I'm a big Sal Frelick fan. I've loved his defense for, you know, since he's been in the league. But that bat is starting to come around. That's nice to see.
Yeah, right? I mean, you start getting some of these guys who finally had some repetition. Pitchers got used to, you know, facing them, and now these guys have to do their sophomore approach where everybody knows everybody and they got to face these guys again. They have to adjust. And if you can't adjust, like Keston Hira was a great example of a guy who just couldn't adjust after that first wave, right?
Yeah.
And now you got all these younger guys who are finally figuring out, you know, the Jake Bowers and the Sal Frelick and all these other guys who can make these adjustments and stay active in the big leagues. And it doesn't hurt that Yelly figured out how to hit a home run again. So yeah, that doesn't hurt.
Of course, everybody, we hope you keep in mind that many years from now, when Scott retires from politics, he'll start up his sports show with me. Be on the lookout for that. That'll be fun.
Scott. I'm telling you, sports, now that we're podcast based here, like, I'm thinking sports show. I'm thinking a men's support show, like, just, you know, just a man show. Like, what does it take to be a guy? You know, like,
I'm for all of it. I will co-host any one of those with you, Matt. That sounds great.
Oh yeah, I got tons of ideas. We can keep the podcasters busy all day.
So. Absolutely. Appreciate you, Scott. If people have follow-up questions, they'd like to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, phone's always on, literally at this point, always. 715-323-3293.
Great conversation. Thanks so much for the time. You be safe out there. We'll talk again next month.
Yeah, you bet, man. Take care.
You too. And a big thank you to, of course, all of you for joining us, our great friends at Crockett Septic, for being our sponsors here at WFHR's Rapids Report.